Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, yes, this isolation business is no cakewalk for lots of us, is it? I mean, many might have lost your job. You're spending hours trying to negotiate with Centrelink, and many of you might have health issues. You aren't leaving the house at all. I know people in that circumstance who are if you've got compromised immune systems, or if you've got other underlying health issues, you're probably very anxious about leaving the house at all. And many of you might be trying to balance working from home and homeschooling kids as well. Right now, what we're being asked to do by our nation's leaders feels very difficult, if not impossible for many, but we're doing it for the safety of the country and the care we have for each other. And it's working. The curve is flattening and the numbers do seem to be positive. But speaking of each other, that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. How's your relationship faring in these tough times? And how have you been getting on with your partner? Or has the stress of isolation got to you both? This situation's provided some pretty unique challenges if you're in a couple or a family. Well, if you're single too. Everyone's on edge, aren't they? It's expected. I guess we haven't been or seen through something like this since maybe, for those who could remember what it was like during the Second World War. Tonight, we're joined by Anne Hollands, relationships expert and director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies, who's here to give us some tips on how to maintain harmony while in lockdown. Anne, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Philip.
Great to have you with us. I suppose it's normal, is it, to feel some tension at this time?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, it's, you know, we don't generally... In the old days, you know, pre-corona, if anyone can remember it, we actually spend remarkably little time together when you sort of looked at it. And it wasn't until the sort of the Christmas holidays came along and we were stuck together in a tent or in a holiday house or in a car for long periods of time. You know, that's when we kind of really came upon these sorts of stresses that are now a daily occurrence, really. So, and it's because our usual lives involve us being busy doing other things separately. We're going to work, we're going to school, we've got lots of after school and after work activities, and that includes the weekends. So we were, you know, as families in the last few decades, we had become, you know, ships passing in the night often, and we would complain that there was not enough time together. So now this is the complete opposite, and yes, it is certainly causing stress of many different kinds.
Yeah, I think that's right. I was thinking about this today. I was thinking, you know, lots of us, when we've been together for a long time or in relationships generally maybe, we negotiate ways around things, don't we? And we spend time in so-called hobbies and activities, which are often ways of just trying to get round grumpy points in relationships. You take all those away, which for many people has happened, and you're really forced to confront the reality of actually being with each other for longer than you had probably wanted in many instances.
Well, yes, as humans, you know, adults and children really thrive when there's a bit of structure, a bit of a predictable routine. We know when we're going to be spending time together and when we're going to be spending time apart, and we've got a bit of a balance of those things. All of that's been stripped away, and it all happened very, very quickly, Philip. So I think for many of us, we were in a bit of shock for a while there. We thought, well, what is this new way of life? And now the sort of the reality is perhaps sort of dawning on us, particularly over this Easter weekend, which, as you said in your intro, was very, very unusual.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if you and your partner have entirely different coping mechanisms when it comes to living in isolation. I mean, a lot of people are getting into fitness. I've had some people texting me saying they've never been fitter. Others are dealing with the stress by, you know, hitting the grog and perhaps drinking more than they ought to. I mean, and that seems to be supported by the figures of online alcohol sales. I mean, do you need to respect your partner's way of dealing with stress?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the overall message here is we need to find a way of pulling together through all of this and not letting it drive us apart. Mm. And how we pull together depends on you know, our ability to really respect each other and the different styles and different personalities. If you've lived together for any length of time with another person, you'll know how different they are to you. There could be all sorts of differences, but one of the major ones that's relevant here is how we deal with stress. So, for example, one of you might be the kind that wants to watch every coronavirus update, listening to Norman Swan, you know, 24/7 or whoever it is, wants to sort of keep tuned into all of that and wants to talk about it with their partner, whereas they might be living with someone who really would rather just shut it all out and spend time alone. And that can be really, really hard, where you're dealing with stress in very, very different ways, and there can be a lot of hurt and misunderstanding that results. So I think it's important to, sit down and go, okay, this is going to be tough. This is tough for both of us. How can we make it work well together? How can we work out, you know, ways that where you get what you need and what matters most to you and I get what I need? How can we arrange our lives? How can we build new routines and new ways of being within the household that we're in that allows for some of those differences, as well as, you know, negotiating how to spend your time together?
Yeah, that business about wanting to follow everything is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I've already noticed that there are people who just want to tune into it 24/7, as it were, and others who, give me the salient bits and then I'll try and do something else.
Well, that's right. That's right. They're very, very different styles. But it is important in the first instance that we take some responsibility for how we're managing our stress, because if we're feeling very, very stressed, that's going to spill over onto other people in the household. Whereas conversely, if we're managing our stress and we're able to be calm, at least some of the time, that also helps other people be calm, and it can actually set a very positive frame, in fact, particularly where there's children involved. So these are things that only we can do it for ourselves. We can't change anyone else's behaviour, but we can change our own. And so looking at the ways that we manage our own anxiety is extremely important.
Yes, this is the time on one, isn't it? It's a tricky one. That's right. You can't change others, but you can certainly have a good crack at changing yourself, even though that's difficult too. I wonder whether you might at times like this start seeing a different side to your partner. You might even be shocked or surprised by some aspects of that.
Well, you might be pleasantly surprised. Actually, look, it doesn't have to all be negative. I think the thing is we need to sort of look for some positive elements in this as well. We could be learning things about each other that we didn't know before. You know, there's a lot of people saying they didn't actually know what their partner's job was before, and now they're sort of seeing what they're doing each day at the other end of the dining table. And so, you know, I think keeping a bit of a sense of humour and some curiosity about the positives as well, rather than sort of just zoning in on the negatives is really important. And yes, there may be negatives, but you've got to kind of keep them in balance.
I get that too, that it may be a chance actually, that's right, to, because you have to be together, to actually realise why you liked each other in the first place.
Well, it would be helpful to try and remember that if you might have forgotten over the years. But, you know, as I was saying a minute ago, Philip, you know, in terms of managing your own stress, I mean, that will help in every situation that you come across here. So work out what it is that you need to do to manage your own stress. Does it help you if you go for a walk? That's often a kind of physical activity. Getting outside, you know, can really help. You know, deep breathing really helps if you're starting to feel stressed, you know, breathing in and out slowly and deeply. Listening to your favourite music, that kind of thing. Turn off the screens and the devices for a while because that can be adding to your stress. And you mentioned alcohol before. I think it's really important to try and limit your alcohol consumption if you can, because that's not going to help your stress in the long run, and it could actually lead to other problems.
How important is it to try and get some space for yourself and for each other, because we often try and do that in relationships, don't we? I don't mean that in a negative way. It just that's often a positive thing in relationships as well, trying to find your own space when you're, of course, when you can go out of the house and do whatever you want. That's easier to find. How do you find it when you really can't do much outside the house?
Well, I think a lot of this will come down to some planning. So if you can sit down with your partner and work out how what kind of new routines do we need each day to get through this, you would plan in to the day the times you spend together and the times you will spend apart and how you will do that. So if you're lucky enough to have enough space in the house, you know, rooms that you can retreat to, you can have different zones. You might, if you're limited in your choices in those zones, you might have to rotate through the work zone, for example. And if one of you is in the work zone or in having to do their work and the other one is somewhere else, then that's, you know, by its very nature, that's time apart, isn't it? So it's about also looking at, well, what times apart, what are the times apart and how are we spending those times, as well as building in some positive times together, maybe going for a walk together each day as well.
Mm. Yeah, what about the sort of housework issues? I mean, this is a perpetual kind of bugbear in lots of relationships anyway, isn't it? Which might be obviated by the fact that, you know, you can be apart, but if someone's in the house all the time and they're habitually not washing up anyway, this sort of thing can get worse, can't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, if you know that it matters to your partner that you wipe down the bench after you been in the kitchen and not leave it messy, then, you know, like why pick a fight over that? You know, just like work out what really is going to help keep the peace for a while, what's going to kind of get you through the day, what extra you can do to make your partner's day go well. And it's amazing if you make that extra effort, then usually we find that other people will step in and compromise in our direction as well.
Mm. Yes, just back on that issue of not being able to change others but maybe changing yourself. That's right. I was discussing recently with someone who said, well, the trouble is we couldn't live with them because they're too messy. I said, well, you know, tell them not to be. Or there is, I mean, there's no such thing as just being messy and not being able to do anything about it, is there?
Well, you know, messiness is one of those core household issues, isn't it, Philip? Where, you know, you're either a neat freak or you know, you're really a much more relaxed person who doesn't understand why the other person gets so anxious about it.
Mm.
You know, like I think that the reality is living in this close quarters with somebody else means you're going to have to really pay attention to what matters to them, not just what matters to you. And the more that you can sort of talk this through and work out, well, what do we need to do? What can we do to make this work well for both of us? Have a plan, have some agreements, some ground rules. Check in. If they're not working, you go, okay, can we have another chat about that thing? Mm. Because that's not working for me. And do it in a way that's as much as possible sort of light touch, so that you're not sort of blaming and pointing the finger and you always and you never. Just, you know, say, look, this will work better for me. If we could have this and this happen, like to own it, say, this is important to me. Talk about yourself, not about the other person all the time.
Yeah. Yes, and often what is occurring to me too, I wonder whether people can get too hung up on trying to divide things up equally.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and maybe that's not really practical. Perhaps if someone is better at cooking, you know, mind you, it might be okay to say, look, I'll take that on. I'll do most of that because it works better if I do it anyway.
Well, you know.
You know, you can do something. Let's work out what else you might be able to do.
Yeah, look, there's no rules to this. And the beauty of it is we can be the architects of our own, you know, relationship plan, really. We can do whatever we want, but it has to be negotiated. And, you know, each of us will have different interests and skills. But the interesting opportunity right now is that maybe there's been a certain pattern before because of, you know, the hours away from home that each partner has had, that maybe now if you're both at home, then the partner who perhaps didn't do much of the cooking might want to give it a go. and might really enjoy it. And that, and other, there could be other sort of changes like that. So you have the opportunity to really create a whole new pattern for your future lives together, which might be fantastic, actually. So there are real opportunities here, and it's not just all negative.
No, exactly. I think that's important to say. Julie's texted me saying, we've started walking together for an hour each day since the virus issues. It's turned out to be a great time to take time just to talk about things we don't normally allocate time and space in our life for. It's been fantastic.
Well, I can there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Fabulous from Julie. Yeah, exactly. So if that wasn't something you were doing before, if you've taken up the habit of walking together, that might be something that you are able to continue once life returns to some kind of normality again. And that might be a really nice thing that you've now created together through this stressful period.
There's this other complication for lots of families too, I guess, Anne, and that is the kids are home a lot because there may be no school on. And that's probably a whole set of responsibilities which aren't normally divvied up. I wonder how you cope with that.
Well, that adds a whole lot of layers of complexity, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard enough two adults working it out between them, as we've been discussing. But, you know, you add one or two or maybe three children into the mix of different ages, and, you know, you're really starting to get levels of, complexity there. And I think, again, the more go back to the beginning and go, how am I going to manage my stress here? Take responsibility for your own stress. And the more that you can do that and build into the, each day some times in the day where you're taking a break and you're looking after yourself, then that will help you manage the children. So, you know, again, having a bit of a plan, maybe sharing some time if there's not another adult in the house, sharing the responsibilities for the children, and making sure that the children have some routines and structure that to help them get through as well, because they won't be used to any of this either, and that can make them feel like, you know, they're all over the place. So, you know, you sit down, have a family meeting. If you've never had that kind of a thing before and it sounds very American, then give it a go.
How do you run a family meeting, Anne?
You just sit down and you go, okay, this is like really weird. We're all stuck at home together. How are we going to get through this? How are we going to make it work well for all of us? Let's talk about what's important to everyone in the family, and then let's work out a plan and let's give it a go. So, you know, again, having, you know, physical activity times through the day for the kids. You know, kids are much better if they can have a bit of a run around or kick the ball in the backyard or go for a bike ride or something. But adults need that as well. And then have some times, you know, where they do their studies or have some quiet inside playing time with you if they're littler. You know, having those various times, write them up on a chart on the wall, and so everyone knows what's happening next and what they're meant to be doing. That can really help calm things down.
I don't know how far we want to go with this, but it's common enough, and it's a common enough observation, isn't it, that women tend to often share more of the emotional load inside the family. And, you know, here we are in a time when really everyone in the family needs to do their bit a bit. Do you think that's an issue that's exacerbated here, or how might you handle that?
Well, I think families will do this in a whole lot of different ways. So there'll be somewhere it will fall on the mother to do everything while the father's in the study doing his work,
yeah.
Right? There will definitely be those families. But there'll be other families where, this will be a very new thing for the dad to be at home. He may not have ever been a stay-at-home dad before. And, you know, a lot of dads really have been, you know, looking for the opportunity, I think, to give this a go, and are very willing to step in and do all the, you know, pull up their sleeves and do that childcare. And I'm actually wondering whether after this is all over, we might actually see dads going back to their bosses and saying, well, you know, I might need a bit more flexibility in my working hours so I can do more of this. Mm. It's been an issue in Australia that even though a lot of companies allow flexible working hours, dads don't tend to take it up. So I think it won't be for everybody, but I think there might be some dads who quite like it.
Mm. That's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, that's been raised about working from home generally, but that's an interesting thing about families, whether families might have seen this time and be experiencing this time as actually a better and closer and more productive and more fulfilling and might try and see this as a more permanent way to live, do you think?
You mean no one leave the house?
No. I don't. Of course, I'm joking.
I don't think anyone would want to continue living quite this way. But certainly sharing responsibilities and maybe spending a bit more time together in more conscious ways, perhaps. You know, and making the most of the time that you've got together will really. Well, they're the opportunities, and it's all within our own hands at the end of the day, how we do this. You know, one of the things that is worrying parents, of course, is this schoolwork that they're meant to be supervising. And I'm really pleased that we've started to hear some of the educational experts coming out saying, don't stress too much about that. You know, it'll be okay. We'll manage it. You know, if you can support your kids to do some of that online learning with the help of the school, that's great. But if you can't, if it's just not working out, then do other things, you know, help get them involved in the cooking or the gardening or the something else and use a bit of maths here and, you know, build it into the sort of normal things of the household. And focus on your relationship with your children as the most important thing here, rather than try to be their teacher as well as their mother or father.
Because the plain fact is that in primary school particularly, I think, you know, kids do catch up and will when things get back to normal. Let's take some calls. Helen, hello.
Oh, good morning, Philip.
Hi.
Oh, or should say good evening.
Good evening, I think, yeah.
We don't know what time of the day it is.
Has it got that bad?
thank you for your guest. It sounds exactly what we're thinking. I'm actually live alone, so I don't have to cope with anybody else at the moment, which is fine. But I was thinking exactly the same thing, that maybe this could be the new normal. For people to develop relationships within the family that have been maybe lacking in the past. And it can be a very, very, from what I see from my neighbours, I'll put it that way, they're all saying, oh, everybody's home. And I think it's wonderful because I live at home and it's lovely to have people nearby now, which wasn't in the past.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's right, Helen. I certainly have noticed in my street, for example, that I have talked to more of the neighbours more often over this period than I would normally do, only because everyone's home.
Yes. And also we're all, like, we're doing this caring, sharing business with, you know, a bit of leftover here and a bit of leftover there, that if this hadn't happened, we wouldn't be doing that.
No, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. No, exactly right. I think that's right, isn't it? That's true, isn't it, Anne? I mean, this is what you're saying, that everyone thinks that this is a problem, but it's also, I mean, it's replete with positive things as well.
Well, if you look for them, absolutely. Yeah. Of course, we can become overwhelmed by our stress and our worry, and there is a lot to worry about, both from a health perspective and economically, if you've lost your job. Or, you know, is struggling financially. But that neighbourhood thing, I've noticed that as well. You know, just seeing people out in my street and whole families, you know, jogging down the street together or going cycling or, you know, neighbours sort of hanging out sort of with a good distance between them. And I think it's lovely, actually, that if you can actually reach out to each other in those positive ways, outside of your family as well, that can really brighten everybody's day.
Mm. Patrick, hello. Hi, Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I lived 60 years ago. We were living in the highlands of New Guinea, mm-hmm. way out in the mountains, with no power, nobody anywhere near, no car, no nothing. And we were playing Ludo every day. And lo and behold, here we are again, 60 years later, playing Ludo.
Have you got any better at it, Patrick?
No, she's winning.
Has it been a positive experience for you, Patrick, do you think?
It's been a very positive experience for my wife. She's doing her history, right. And she's just right about the place Goroka, which is where the nearest place. And she says she will have that finished by the end of April, and so therefore she's found that this has been very positive for her. The only difference is we can't go to the coffee shops that we used to go to and so forth.
So how have you? I mean, what are you doing in terms of change routine to deal with that?
We're changed because we can't go out. You know, we're getting deliveries from the children. We probably will go to the chemist tomorrow and that. But we're relying on our family, which is, you know, sort of. Well, that's the way it goes.
Sure. No, exactly. Yeah, all right. Thank you. I imagine that board games are probably doing very good business. Karen
is having fun.
Yeah, good on you. Thank you. Karen in Sydney has texted me saying, Phil, I've lived and worked with my partner for more than 40 years, so no surprises there, and we're managing okay, even though there's quite an age difference. But the hardest thing we're finding is not seeing the grandchildren, 1, 3, and 7. Their family moved here at the end of last year from overseas, but only for 1 year. We were looking forward to that, obviously, and now a lot of that time is going to be spent apart. Yeah, I can really understand that, Karen. That's tough, isn't it? That's tough.
Yeah, that's so tough for someone in Karen's position if you've only got them here for a year. And this situation is eating up a lot of that time. That's heartbreaking, really. But it is very heartbreaking for a lot of grandparents at the moment, and for grandchildren, who perhaps they were, you know, typically these days we, you know, grandparents will see their grandchildren once a week, if not more, if they live nearby, and. And, you know, like, I think it's a very common that relationship is now, you know, perhaps even more important than ever before. But, of course, we're having to do it via video conference these days. And that's it's not quite the same.
No. Christine also makes a good point, which I did want to discuss with you too, Anne, she says it's also challenging for those of us not in a relationship, you know, struggling without the connectedness that a relationship brings. Might be in a remote location or no surety of the next job or address. I'm doing okay compared to many others. Yet on a bad hair day, it can be difficult to remain positive. I mean, that's an interesting point too, isn't it? Because we all talk about, you know, the stresses that being cooped up together in relationships can bring. But for people who, of course, are not in a relationship and might want one and looking for one or looking for others, that, or even if they have, you have a wide circle of friends, it's tough in that way too, isn't it? It's not just people in relationships, of course.
No. It's tough in different ways, isn't it? So you're not having to share a small space with other people. However, for you, perhaps, you know, going out to work and socialising, you know, you might have been involved in various social activities on a regular basis if you're a single person. And, you know, I think that 20-somethings and 30-somethings who aren't in relationships pretty much live their whole lives outside the home in normal times. You know, they might meet up with friends in cafes or play sport or, you know, do whatever they do, and all of that is gone. So their days now are often, you know, working remotely on computers and telephones all day, and then catching up socially via computers in the evening, and that's, you know, there's a particular kind of intensity to that can really start to get you down. It's, you're not getting that human to human contact.
Yeah, no, exactly. Richard from Townsville. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Phil.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me on your program.
Pleasure.
I'll start again. You caught me by surprise. two things.
Mm-hmm.
What about the homeless people? What's happening to them? They're out on the streets. The other thing is, I'm from Townsville, and we had a flood here last February. I live on my own. I'm not back in my house yet. I have none of my possessions, except what I've bought since the flood,
yep,
enough to survive on. And I've virtually been in isolation for the last 12 months, except for a game of golf or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't even do that because they're all closed. I just thought I'd bring to the surface that and find out how people are getting on. I know I'm going up the wall at the moment, just staring at the wall. I'm listening to your program every night too.
Yeah, good on you. Good on you. Look, I agree. I mean, and what the situation Richard's in is not unusual, actually.
Well, you know, we've had some really difficult sort of events in Australia in the last year. So certainly the floods up in Queensland. Then we had the bushfire crisis, and we hadn't really recovered from that in any sense as a country before this coronavirus hit. And so there's been a lot of dislocation of people's lives even before now, as Richard's example sort of really highlights. So the normal routines and having you know, even having a home that you feel comfortable in with your possessions around you and all of that isn't the case for everyone in Australia. We're all in different places, sort of physically and emotionally at this time. And some of us have really suffered for months and months and months leading up to this. So that would make it very, very much harder.
Mm. Yeah, go on, Richard.
What about the homeless people? How are they getting on?
Well, yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's a very difficult situation for them.
Do they get fined for sitting in the park or something?
No, I hope not. I hope not, Richard. But I mean, like, I'm glad you raised it because it's a very important part of it as well. And that we think everyone's in certain sets of circumstances. There are so many sets of circumstances. This affects, isn't there?
Well, there is, and look, I'm not an expert on, you know, how all those social services are being managed, but I'm aware that, you know, some of them have been affected by those social distancing rules in terms of actually reaching out to people in need, and that new arrangements have had to be made to support people that are very vulnerable in our community. And that's an important aspect of all of this, that everyone gets looked after and as much as possible, particularly the most vulnerable.
Sure, exactly. Peter, hello.
No, thank you. I suppose we're used to living a life that we are now because of disabled daughters, so we sort of managed to cope with all the things that are thrown up to you and one thing and another, and so we're riding through it pretty well and that, but...
You can't normally, because of your daughter, Peter?
Well, our life is dependent upon our situation, so we're sort of used to, she's 34 now, so we just roll with the punches of what life served up to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coping with this quite well. I duck out and do all the shopping. My wife's got a chronic lung thing, so I just make sure that I don't bring anything home and that. But the point I was just making at that, so... Yes, we sort of can handle this, not like some other people are saying, but as the gentleman said about homeless and other people, but I think the greatest thing is the phone call. I've rung so many people since this has started, and you'd be surprised at how wonderful the reception I got back from them. Oh, you rang, oh, how are you? And that, you know, you don't necessarily have to say I'm ringing because of this. You just ring and say, I want to catch up on that.
Yep.
And it costs bugger all for a quick phone call and to let people know how they are you and what you're doing, what's happening and that. I've always been a great believer in speaking to people, and rather than on the computer or something, just speaking to people, hear their voice, let them hear your voice and that. And, mate, I just think a phone call to whoever you is dear and near to you or whoever you're worried about or that, I think it's a wonderful thing to do. My family communicate with my wife naturally on the, you know, the phones and the iPads and one thing constantly, and I do look in on it too, but I think there are, as we get older, there are people out there that a phone call was just so fantastic to hear your voice, and you ask them and how they're going and that. I think it's the best thing. It doesn't, these days you can get a plan with your phones, you know, it doesn't cost you much at all, really.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I'd encourage people to pick up the phone, your kids that you went to school with or your old sweethearts or your whoever, you know, family members, people I've worked with and that, that we used to go out and have a lunch, and we don't do that anymore for a while, but just still bring around and see how they are and have a chat. And you'd be surprised at the end of it, they think, oh, thanks for calling, that was nice. So I'd encourage that.
Yep. Very well said, Pete. Very well said. I agree. My texter says, my three children have school-aged children and they're all working from home. It's an impossible situation as both partners work and are expected to give attention to their jobs during working hours by their employees. Who can do that and teach as well as supervise children? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some pretty prickly issues, I imagine, in that, Anne, aren't there?
Absolutely. And we've got to be realistic. If we have children at home who need our supervision, then we're not going to be able to work our normal working hours. It's just impossible.
No, your productivity is not going to be what it was. It just isn't.
No, no. So that's a discussion you have to have with your employer. And, I think, smart employers will understand this, will make allowances for and provide flexibilities for parents in this situation, because you don't want to lose good employees. And how you treat them during this time will really matter later on as to whether they stay with you. So employers really need to think about how they can support their staff at a time like this. Can I just pick up on what Peter was saying before about the phone call?
Yeah.
I really agree. That was a fabulous suggestion, Peter. And I think that obviously anyone in a caring role really understands social isolation. And there are many, many people out there who are dealing with this, even aside from coronavirus. And I think that if we reach out and make a phone call to someone who we want to connect with, that actual doing that and hearing their voice and their pleasure at you ringing them actually makes us feel good then. So, it's like we're doing a good deed in a sense, and we know that that helps our mood. It also helps the other person's mood and you kind of spreading the love around. I think that's a fabulous idea. And that is, human-to-human contact, even via the phone, is what we all thrive on. We don't do well in isolation.
We don't. We don't. Andy, hello.
G'day.
G'day, Andy.
How you going? I just wanted to make a comment which the lady brought up before, and I think it really works well is routine.
Hmm.
Try and keep in a routine, set a routine. I could work from home, but I still go to the office every day. There's nobody there. It's a big empty space. I'm the only bloke there. But things like that, you've got to do that. You've got to take a shower, go to do that. You've got to do your exercise, have your lunch, whatever. I think it really helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, in other words, that's right. In other words, just make a routine for yourself, a bit like if you normally had to go to the office or whatever, or had to go to work and keep to that.
Exactly. And it's even like I call my mum twice a week in Australia, in Port Macquarie,
Yeah.
She's sitting by the phone waiting for the call, regular as clockwork. And just things like that, it really works. It helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good suggestion too, isn't it, Anne? Try and keep it as on schedule as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Mostly we'll need slightly changed routines, though. So, for example, we don't have to commute now to the office or to whatever our workplace is. So we're saving a lot of time. So maybe that's extra time we could use for exercise or for doing something else that we often go, well, I wish I had time to do this. I that's something that I'm struggling with, is how to productively use the extra time I might have up my sleeves, because, it's odd to have that little bit of extra time.
Mm.
So, yeah, but a bit of a routine is not a bad idea.
Amanda, hello. Hi, Amanda.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Just ring up about the COVID and relationship sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so both my partner and I fly in, fly out workers.
Uh-huh.
He works over west, I work in South Australia.
Yep.
So that's really played a big impact with the 14 days lockdown that you got to do if you fly in state or not.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so, yeah. They're basically stuck over west until, yeah, no idea when at the moment, so...
Yeah, yeah, no. Well, exactly. So what are you doing? What, how are you dealing with this? How are you responding?
A lot of FaceTime, but working in the mines, it's hard. So you're doing like 12-hour shifts, so there's not really much time either side of work to get the phone calls in, but sort of doing that as much as possible and just trying to keep it,
yeah,
conversation and communication up.
Yep. How are you finding that FaceTime conversation? I think for some people it works better than others, doesn't it? How does it work for you?
It's difficult. I've never liked phone calls or FaceTime or anything like that, so it's something that I've sort of had to acclimatise to, but you sort of would never have anything like the real thing, but it's better than nothing, really.
Yeah, I know, fair enough too. I mean, it's a point, isn't it, Anna? But, you know, there are modes of communication, aren't there? And for some people it is the telephone, but, you know, for lots of people, they don't like long telephone calls. They'd prefer, you know, their intimate, their, you know, personal relationships to be conducted in other ways.
Well, absolutely. So we are all different, and I think the callers calling in tonight are showing some of those differences, that we're all in different circumstances, we all have different styles and ways of doing things. And so I think, you know, we need to bear that in mind. If we're trying to connect with people in our family or our friends, you know, perhaps ask them, well, what's the best way for us to stay in touch, given that we can't see each other for a while? But, you know, I think keeping in touch in some way is extremely important. Even if it isn't a long phone call, you know, what, maybe it's a short phone call occasionally, or maybe it's sending emails or whatever it is, that sort of human-to-human contact at a time of this kind of physical distancing that we've got will really help our well-being in many, many ways.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Amanda. 1-300-800-222 is the number if you'd like to call. There are some lines free. Pat, g'day.
Hi.
Hi, Pat.
I have given this a lot of thought, and I take it very seriously, but then I live alone, so I've got plenty of time to think about it, and I watch all the things on TV about it. But I then thought about the light-hearted approach, and I thought, well, you know, the poor old thieves out there, they can't be doing too good, because everybody's home now, like 75% or more will probably be home, whereas the houses were all empty before for them to break into, so there should be less break-in.
Yes, I imagine
there should
so.
Be less car stealing, because there's less cars on the road and a lot easier for the police to spot them if they've pinched cars and that. Chemists have security outside, or the big chemists do. The supermarkets have spacing in, and also with not so many in there, they'd be able to see them pinching things out of the supermarkets a lot more, so they can't be having a very good time. But then I thought about that more seriously. That was only a light-hearted approach I had about all that. And then I thought about it more seriously, and I thought, well, with everybody at home, I thought my first thoughts were domestic violence would go up sky high too, but then I thought maybe not. It might level out a bit, because a lot of people at home, like if you've got domestic violence, it tends to turn to screaming and yelling. You don't whisper at each other if there's violence involved. So that might, knowing everyone's home, all your neighbours are home, and that might sort of keep a bit of a lid on it. But then I thought about it all, and I thought, well, maybe a little bit of good might come out of it. These teenagers and 13, 14-year-olds that are out prowling the streets at night time and stealing cars and breaking in and doing all the wrong things, if their fathers are home from work and taking more interest in the family and what have you, wouldn't it be good if some of them sort of had time to think about these things and sort of turned their life around a little bit? I mean, a lot of them don't get proper supervision and that's why they're out with their mates and all this kind of thing. So I was thinking it from that angle and thinking, well, you know, maybe there might be a little bit of good of it socially.
There might be a few positives in this, Pat. I mean, well, I suppose that's a bit of what you're saying, isn't it, Anne? There will be positives in this in unexpected ways.
Well, I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that there would be, we'd have the opportunity to perhaps reconnect with our kids if we've, you know, we can get very disconnected through, you know, spending time apart, being very busy and so forth. You know, if dads can connect with their teenage kids, for example, as Pat suggests, that's a positive thing, and you know, understand to be able to understand each other better and to really strengthen our relationships with each other within the family, that will stand us in good stead in the future with all of the ups and downs of life. There will be other ups and downs in the future, and our families really are our first line of defense. They're our first support team. And so if we can strengthen those relationships through this time, then that means that we'll have a lot of strength to fall back on later on when we need that support.
Yep. No, exactly right. Phone calls are great, says my texter, but my dad's 93. He's in Queensland. His phone's not working. This is Karen texting. Karen's in Sydney. He's in a retirement village that's locked down. It's very upsetting that I can't talk to him. And to think that I'll miss being able to be with him for his 94th birthday early in July. Well, that's true, isn't it? That you know, it's all very well to particularly for parents, relatives in nursing homes, it can be very difficult. The phone call's not always straightforward, is it?
Well, it's not straightforward in those sorts of facilities, and if we can't physically go, and I know there are many people who. With many facilities that aren't allowing any visitors at the moment.
Yep.
Even if you could travel to it, they're not allowing you in. So I do worry about those older people who, for them, that contact is critical, and it's not the same at all for them, stuck in an institution. So there are a lot of people very vulnerable at the moment, and let's hope that this doesn't continue on too much longer, so that we can actually reconnect with each other if that isn't possible at the minute.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Michael in Perth. Hi, Michael.
Yes.
G'day, Michael.
Yes, thanks for an interesting program. I have some good news from Western Australia,
mm-hmm.
Where we have somewhere between 9,000 and 11,000 homeless, and the government. Bless their hearts, are taking advantage of there being empty hotels in Perth, and they are actually housing homeless, so not, obviously not all of them, but as many as they can, in those hotels.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's happened elsewhere too, as I understand too.
Yes, and so it's a very good forward step. And congratulations to the government. May other governments around Australia follow their example. And this might be some kind of a circuit breaker for many homeless people who, while they're safely off the street away from probably the most dangerous place where there's a virus about, while they're safely off the street, then other serious issues can be addressed. For example, dental health.
Mm.
For example, general standard of appalling health, which afflicts sure. many of these good folk who, in most cases, have serious difficulties which need to be addressed.
Yep, nice, well said. Michael, I think that's a very, very good point. Francie, g'day. Hi, Francie.
Hi, a very uplifting program. If I had come in halfway and wasn't sure what the subject was, I would think it was talking about retirement.
Francie, there are some similarities, you know, aren't there? There are some similarities, yeah.
Yeah, well, we retired in 96, my husband and I in late 80s and mid 80s, and great-grandchildren. That's our issue. I mean, we miss them terribly. We live at Bribie. We've got a big house, lots of room. They come camping every Easter, but they're not. But I found a way to keep in touch and keep them. I've got a whole series of books the Courier Mail were putting out for the little ones, and I'm eking them out, sending them in the post. And, of course, getting things in the post these days for little ones, they range from 12 to 5, is quite an experience, and encouraging them to write on the note paper that great-grandma sent, and they're sending little notes back and pictures. So that's another way we can keep in contact with the little ones.
Mm, yeah, no, fair enough too.
It's working. It's working well. It keeps us cheerful.
Good on you, Francie.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yes, well, there are various ways of doing it. And the main thing is, as I think as you've been saying, is to, there are positives out of this. Keep in touch as much as possible and give each other, well, I suppose the normal thing, cut each other some slack, would you think?
Totally, if you can. Yeah. Look, and just be realistic. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have good days.
Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe you can take turns having your bad days so that at least one of you is having a good day.
Thanks anyway, Anne. Good on you.
Okay,
Anne Hollins from the Institute of Family Studies.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.